Oh my gosh, I just love that. This is like part two of On Staying Sane with Kathleen and I. And, you know, even when our technology drops off, you know, we have a choice to be stressed about it or we can just jump right back in. So here we are, part two.
So what I liked what you were talking about with the, you know, just the meditative quality of going up and down the stairs with the laundry or, you know, unpacking the groceries. I really like that because it's something you can do for self-care. Like you can turn these chores into self-care, right? I mean, you have to do them anyway so that your household, right. But there's another significant component to self-care that I wanted to talk about. And that's from a much more global level. I actually appreciate your day-to-day detail level more because it's something that we can all just like change today. But I was interviewing an old colleague/friend, and she is a managing director for the state of Florida for a law firm. And she says, Kathleen, it's so different. So she does all the hiring. And she says, it's so different from when you and I came of age a long while ago, when it was like, you know, she said she used to stand out at the courthouse and said to the lawyer, do you have a brief I could write? I'm a new lawyer. Can I write the brief? Like there was no vacation. There was like just scrapping for work. And when she interviews these new attorney candidates now, they say, now, how many days a week can I work from home? And what is my package going to be like that allows me to travel? And so they're doing, you know, it's unheard of like from our generation or our parents' generation, but this self-care goes into their whole being of taking jobs and planning relationships. And it's like, it's much more ingrained than you and I are familiar with. Like we had to learn this as the world learned it. It's already out there. It's really interesting to me.
Oh my goodness. And just kind of on a fun note, I was looking at the trends in fashion, and because everyone was so used to wearing their like comfy clothes, I guess the business casual market's like blowing up, like elastic waistbands. And even when a friend came over yesterday, it was so cute. She had her pink slippers on and she said, I don't even care. I just went to my real estate meeting looking good, but with my little pink slippers, and everyone thought it was hilarious.
Oh, and like, that is funny.
Yeah. Like she literally, she's like, I don't care.
What decade of her life is she in?
She's in her 50s.
Huh.
And she just
think
said,
I could go out in slippers. Sorry.
Well, she's like, you know, that's another neurostyle thing. I mean, right. It depends on the generation and it depends on the attitude. And it also depends on your personality. So she had these like fluffy pink, remember Green Acres is the place to be. Okay. So most people may or may not remember, but Zsa Zsa Gabor wore these like very frou-frou things. So she had a very like nice, like very business casual look. And she came over and I'm like, oh my God, I love your slippers, which is fine coming over to socialize.
You got to get a picture of those slippers and put it in the show notes.
Oh my God, that's funny.
You do. Okay. She'll take them for you. Okay. She's going to go out with them on.
Okay.
And then those will be our inspiration. Like sometimes you need to.
Cinderella slipper, the pink slippers.
You need to wear your slippers to a business meeting.
Yeah. And it could be the mindset of the slippers.
Right. Or, you know, for your friend, the slippers themselves. And that will be our symbol of self-care.
Yeah.
Like she needed that.
1,000%. And also, I just want to say something because let's actually just broaden this out to all the different generations. Your example is fantastic because I think this is affecting you and I. You're talking about back in the day, what we would have done. But I think across the board, every generation, age, race, gender, everything is feeling like they want comfort. They want health. They want to know. I feel like when the pulse of consciousness, we've all been faced with this mortality, especially before we had tools in the toolbox for better outcomes with the pandemic. People were feeling like, if I die, what's going to happen? So I feel like at every age group, and I know that there's people that had higher risk factors, and we all know this, but right. I think as a collective, we were in the survive mode, mental, physical, and spiritual. And I think there's been a huge shift in the landscape and the mindscape of the entire planet because of it.
And do you want to attach, like, you know, I know that you, this is not exactly what you always want to do, but I'm going to push you a bit. Do you want to attach some sort of, review of that mind shift? Like, do you think it's for the better?
Oh my goodness. I think it's for the better. I think that for me, it's been part of my mindscape because I'm on the front lines of mental health, you know, for 25 years now. So teaching people how to have self-care, I think the fact that we're able to talk, I think because, you know, different people have different health issues, I think it would come up socially, especially when we in the previous last year, we're picking like who's in our social group. Mm-hmm. So we had to make strategic decisions based on the age and health status of our family members. And I had someone, let me just give a precise example, someone in her mid-20s that had a mom who had cancer and was getting chemo. And she just loves her mom so much at a time in her life where she would have probably broadened her social group to many more. She did a very vulnerable share with her friends, her close friends, right, and didn't get to see them. So I think that level of a vulnerable conversation about health and about your mental health and your immune system was right, just like a product of the reality of the pandemic. So I think the fact that people can go deeper into self-care and deeper into health and mental health is a gift. I think it's a real gift for humanity. I think it's part of the paradigm progression. And I also have one more thing to say about it. I feel like the what we just have been going through and still continue to go through in different ways, it's made people almost like think of things on a more uniform mindset for humanity, that we're all in this together. Like, it doesn't matter, you know, there's a real vulnerability for health that I think made us have, if we're fortunate, this is the part where we can kind of, this is almost like the opposite of the discussion we were having in part one about the violence. I feel like the pandemic could be very unifying in wanting to have better lives for our children and for all of us.
Well, I think many people would say that's a goal, but I'm not sure I'm ready to go down the path of that this has been unifying.
Oh, no, no, no. I would hope it would be. And so maybe we can go. I know that we wanted to talk about.
I feel like it's been so crazy divisive for a health event because it's, you know, it's really oozed way out of health into politics. And I mean, it's, people are still upset with one another about this.
I agree.
I know.
If you want to put me on the hot seat and ask me a specific question about it, I can answer. I didn't want to just freestyle that because
I had to put out,
you asked me if I thought that the pandemic has helped in any ways. The answer, I gave that very nice answer of the yes. And I think your transition of, but let's look at the other side. I love to have balanced, neutral conversations. And right. I think I'm almost afraid to go there because I shouldn't be afraid. So let me go into this. And I mean, I want to take this outside of myself. I've had clients, I've had many people have different family systems, have different belief systems around the pandemic.
Right. You've been on the front lines of that where people are butting heads, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I'm very excited to, after 3.5 years, I get to see my sister and my brother-in-law and my nieces and nephew this weekend. So the pandemic has affected a lot of us, our ability to see people we love, and especially just with different neuro style. You know, my son, I think he's like, Mom, we're going on a plane. And before he used to be afraid of that. And now he's really kind of integrated and his sensory style is like really in a thrive space. Mm-hmm. So I think whether it's people butting heads of the belief system around masks or no masks, vaccines right, or no vaccines, or when do we get to travel? Because it seems like every time, you know, I waited 3 years to get on a plane because I was trying not to get COVID. And what do I get? I get COVID. I mean, I did a show on this already. I went to Maui, had an incredible trip, but 3 days later I got it. So I do think it's there's a lot of tough stuff, not only with the violence in the world, but we're still, I mean, I feel like humanity is almost like desensitized to trauma.
Mm. Well, I mean, did you know, I can give you, because, you know, I'm like really in touch with the news. I bet there's a fair number of Americans who didn't know that there was a mass shooting at a mall in Indiana over the weekend.
No, I didn't.
Right. Because there was. And a gunman went into the food court, He was maybe 18.
Oh my God. It seems like everyone's 18 that's doing this.
And he was stopped from killing more people by a man who was 22 and had a legal carry gun, who shot and killed the gunman.
Wow.
But the wow thing isn't that. The wow thing is most Americans probably don't know that story because it's becoming so common.
Yes.
I was in Tampa, Florida, and on July 5th, the day after that parade near our hometown, they covered it in about a 45-second format.
Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say desensitized, that's it.
Well, when we had our tech snafu going from part one to part two, I was thinking, what else gives me, like, you know, you just said the desensitization, but then I try to look at who are the change makers. So I've really been impressed with Matthew McConaughey and how he's mm-hmm. lobbying for different things within the kind of control of guns. And the way he's doing it, he's really wanting tighter gun laws. And he's really, I don't know, he gives me hope, because there's people that are using their influence to try to get legislation to change. So what I would say to everyone is we the other countries can't even believe what's going on in America. I mean, if I were living in another country and I knew that there's certain laws with controlling gun violence that are working, and there's no school shootings and there's no mall shootings, I'd be looking at America like we're the wild, wild west.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, so when you talk about the upsetting thing to me is when you talk about these gun issues, they are so political, because there's a large group that would disagree with you. They would have facts of how, there was just an assassination in Japan of a former world leader, and it was with the gun, you know. So
yeah, but I haven't even been able to get it fleshed out. I'm not a gun expert, and I'm not pretending to be. Right. When we just say these broad statement linear comments, I'm not saying no one should ever have a gun. I'm just saying that
no. But I'm like, every little bit of it, it's all debated. It's all, and that's the divisiveness. Like there's no.
But can I read this? Cause I think Matthew McConaughey said something so lovely.
Oh yeah. He's great.
He said, we need to invest in mental health care. We need safer schools. We need to restrain sensationalized media coverage. And we need to restore our family values. And we need to restore our American values. And we need responsible gun ownership. So I like the responsible part, but I want to just validate your point about how political this is. Yeah. And I'm not a political expert, so I don't like to go. I like to validate the emotional feeling of learned helplessness. How do we deal with all the violence going on near our homes, near our schools? I mean, my son, oh my gosh, Kathleen, we didn't finish off my son's school year in person, because there was graffiti in his school, and they assessed it, the police assessed it, and it was enough of a threat that my son went from excited to do those end of the year school parties to Zoom. And we as moms did something really positive and fun. So the reality is for all of us. And how do we, and that's the day I think I did a really fun show called The Slurpee Solution. So I think I don't want to get desensitized either, but your point about how like it was only a 45 seconds, or why don't we know about the Indiana? I think that's concerning too. I think we need to know about it, but it would be incredible If we had more solutions. And I think that's the part where I think people sometimes get so overwhelmed, Kathleen, that sometimes they can't even open it up to read. Because they're like, what's the solution? What's the solution? I think that's...
Well, there is none. And if you go back, responsible gun ownership.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds really great. Mm-hmm. But then when our country tries to figure out, you know, what that means.
Exactly.
So basically, yeah, he's right. But what does that mean? And correct. Then that's where it all falls off a cliff.
Correct.
And so like, it's almost like when I hear that, I'm like, I hear like that Charlie Brown, like,
oh my God, before you said it, I was thinking wah, wah, wah.
Right. I mean,
we had a shared wah, wah, wah moment.
Like, of course. Yeah. I mean, and Matthew McConaughey hails from Texas, where gun ownership to many people is very important. And, you know, and so then my mind goes that he has talked about politics and possibly entering. So, you know, I don't know.
I think that this is a good time just to shift to back to the self-care, because when we look at
it, because we need it.
Yes. I mean, I needed even talking about this. I was like looking at the clock. I'm like, okay, wrap this up, ladies. And I don't mean it because I don't care about what we're saying. So this is what I want to say, everyone. We all have this shared feeling. I believe no matter how you feel about gun ownership, it's really about safety for our children and ourselves. And how can we get that outside of politics? That's too big to tap into. So what I like to do is go back into simple, how do we stay sane on planet Earth? We have to we have to have mindful ingestion of anything we do, the people we hang out with, the work-life balance that we addressed eloquently, I think, throughout this part one and part two. We need to take pauses. And I believe that I think we did a show on an Embrace Your Neurostyle where I said radical happiness. No, I really changed that. I thought
radical infinite happiness, and it stressed me out.
Right. So I think, how do we have peace? Yeah. How do we have the most peace even in moments of crisis? And so that is something where, for me personally, because my neurostyle feels as though I'm at the time of the crime scene. I had this talk, I think, with you, and I think I had it on another show, where everyone's neurostyle, if you're used to maybe reporting the news, or you're part of the FBI, or you're someone in your style, is you still have compassion and empathy, but you don't feel like you're at the scene again and again. You have a different level of a sensory input. So I would say the biggest advice I can give about staying sane when we're looking at all the crime is, how do you make your own home life safe? How do you do your holistic health plan? And how do you have an awareness when you go into your feeds, your emails, your work life, your news feeds? How do you grab the right amount to know what's going on in the world to make a difference for yourself and for your family? Because then you can just be like, it's more manageable. Because you and I even were like, oh my God, responsible gun ownership. I'm like, okay, that would take years for people to figure out. So then we have to go back to how do we do it in our own homes. So you want to add to that, or kind of any summaries or anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the brass tacks of it is, you know, that the neurostyle is key. You can have, you know, four people in your home, and they can have radically different levels of what they can tolerate and what they want to tolerate and how it should be handled. And, you know, you and your partner could be completely different, and it's okay. But I do like, I do like what you said about, you know, surrounding yourself with people who give you the things you need, because there are some people who get real riled up and they're always talking, and they love to talk to other people and debate, and that's fun. And they're you know, like their voices raise and they think that's wonderful. And there's others who want this calm, cool discussion of things, or not even to discuss things. You know, you find what works for you and surround yourself with people that it works for you.
Well, I want to thank you for eloquently bringing this up. I think this is a very important deep dive tip. So in redefining, if someone's never heard the shows, but most people have. So neurostyle is that we all process and perceive things in our own unique way. And you just said, we talked about hanging out with certain people or not, but I want to go a deeper of how to have a transition comment to someone that has a different neurostyle than you. So you can still hang out with them, but maybe allow conversations to have maybe a certain level of impact. So let me give you a real precise example. Yesterday, I was having kind of a nice afternoon because I really didn't take off this weekend. So I kind of took a Monday afternoon as my weekend. And I was swimming in the pool next to someone, a dear friend. And we literally started to, in a compassionate way, talk about another dear friend. But this woman said, okay, I don't need to know much more. I wasn't even going to go there because she said, I know she's dealing with trauma. And right now, if I start to hear her trauma, it's going to make this moment not as peaceful and joyful.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's a transition, everyone. If you are in a debate and someone's highly intelligent and you know they're passionate, maybe they're part of changing lobbying, or maybe they're a physician or an attorney or a teacher or anyone that's just gone through something, a way to do this is to validate their sensory awareness and say, I know that's really important to you. I have about one more minute of being able to talk about this, because it's just too much for me right now. And I don't want to be disrespectful, but I need to. It's almost like when you're saying no to dessert and you're like, I already ate enough this week. Mm-hmm. So I just want to like gracefully push away from the table. And I think if we had more grace in communication with different neurostyles, that would be a huge way to stay more sane.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That just nailed it. That nailed it.
I just pictured a meme, by the way, I just pictured a really fun meme, because I see things in color, of us literally like ending the show, like both of us just pushing away from the table now. Goodbye.
Goodbye. I'm going to go do self-care. All right. Anything else, Dr. D?
No, I just want to say thank you, Kathleen. I know we're probably going to be doing shows like once a month now, or once every 2 weeks, because we're both doing great self-care and like almost like strategizing other cool productions. So I just want to thank you for our time today. I really appreciate you. And I love when you put me on the hot seat. So thank you.
Yay. Okay. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, everyone. Stay sane.